Monster Man, Episode 363, Chaotic Encounters. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at another listener-submitted bestiary. This one by Richard Marple, the author of The Bats of St. Abbans. But before we do that, it's time to thank some new Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backers, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is all about the Deities and Demigods supplement and using religion and mythology in your fantasy role-playing games. So thank you very much, Thomas Louth, or Loth, and Adrian Herman. I really appreciate your support. So in other news, I recently did a guest spot on another podcast. My good friend, the science historian Kit Chapman, if you're interested in the history of element discovery, check out Kit's book, Super Heavy. Kit asked me to come on the podcast, The Great History Hack, and talk about the First Crusade. So it's basically an hour of me just talking about the First Crusade. I was a little concerned that I'm not enough of an expert on the subject. You know, it's not my field of research, but I guess I know enough about it to talk about it for an hour. So I had a lot of fun being on the show. And if you're interested in medieval history and hearing me talk about things, and I think the odds are pretty good considering that you're listening to this, go check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. Today's bestiary was sent in by listener Richard Marple, and Richard, as I mentioned, is the author of The Bats of St. Abbans, which was a scenario for the Midderlands setting, which I was part of a playtest for last year, together with some other listeners. And this is not something that's out yet. Well, here, I'll just let Richard explain. He says, Chaotic Encounters is an art punk scrapbook style bestiary composed of art from all across history and the world, combined, remixed, or interpreted into weird new creatures that could fit into any fantasy game. It's systemless, though I do work in some hooks to help GMs import it into their preferred system, and mostly give the creatures descriptions rather than names to help with importing them into settings as well. I don't have a publication date in mind at the moment, and there's lots of work to do still, but it's never too early to start spreading the word about an indie project. So Richard sent over a selection of monsters from Chaotic Encounters, and I've picked two to talk about in today's episode. And one of them I picked partly because it ties into last episode, into the interview that I did with I Am Sakurp, where we talked about Medusa. Because the first monster on our list is the Anti-Gorgon. Now, the Anti-Gorgon is conceptually very understandable. It is a snake, but then growing out of its head are a bunch of little human heads. And this snake could be pretty big. It could be up to 20 feet long, in which case the human heads would be, you know, almost human head sized. For my metric listeners, 20 feet is about 6 meters. Or it could be quite small, in which case I assume that the human heads are sort of miniature. And the Anti-Gorgon has two notable, like, I don't know if they're powers. I'm going to use kind of the show business language that I love and call them gimmicks. That's not intended as any kind of criticism. The first, and probably my favorite, is that the Anti-Gorgon, if it looks at a statue, the statue comes to life. So just like it is, you know, visually the reverse of a Gorgon, its powers are also the reverse of a Gorgon. Instead of turning people to stone, it turns statues into real people. The second gimmick is that the Anti-Gorgon has kind of a divided consciousness. It's sort of a collective consciousness that includes the snake head, which represents the id, and the human heads, which are more like the superego. But even then, the human heads aren't, I don't think, a wholly unified consciousness. So it really does have this kind of committee of more rational beings trying to steer it around. It even says that there are lots of people who have been killed by an Anti-Gorgon while the human heads shouted in protest. So the human heads can only kind of like advise and try to steer the Anti-Gorgon, but they're not 100% successful. Which reminds me a little bit of that game Chaotic, where the characters were all consciousnesses that were inhabiting the same body. After the last time I talked about that game, I went and found a copy of it online. I believe like the full text is up on the author's website or something. I may be misremembering that. But then I realized that I didn't really have the time to read a game that I have absolutely no intention of ever running. So you're just going to have to rely on my memory of having flipped through it in Gamescape in Palo Alto, California in like 1995 or thereabouts. I like the idea of divided consciousness in an NPC. It's always kind of a good hook
for player characters trying to talk their way out of trouble. You know, if you think about like the old kind of fairy tale bit of getting the two-headed giant's two heads to argue with each other, right? That's kind of a classic move that it seems would work with the Anti-Gorgon, right? If you could manage to get the snake head and the human heads disagreeing with each other, then maybe you could run past. Alternatively, the Anti-Gorgon could be a useful creature. If you need some statues brought to life, I guess that would do. I think one of the kind of interesting implications of the Anti-Gorgon is how we think about Gorgons, because I don't personally think of a Gorgon as having any kind of snake-like cognition. You know, the snakes for hair, that's just a symbol of, you know, its monstrous nature. It's uncanny, unnatural. It's something that shouldn't be. But I don't think that we're meant to think that there's anything particularly snake-like about Medusa. Although ancient Greek art and mythology did attribute all sorts of characteristics to snakes, so who knows? Next on my list is the Endolphin. And the Endolphin is an example. It's not really a monster at all. It's a creature that, in theory, has a good effect. The Endolphin is just what it sounds like. It's a dolphin that makes people happy. It releases, as it were, endorphins. And that sounds like a good thing, but as with anything else, you can have too much of a good thing. So if you're out traveling on a ship and a pod of Endolphins comes splashing past, then, you know, the crew are going to feel a little better, they're going to be happier, they're going to work, you know, a little bit longer and a little more enthusiastically. Everybody's just going to be in a good mood. But, you know, the word endorphin comes from a phrase that means internal morphine. So, you know, morphine was sort of identified first, and then the term was applied to endorphins as kind of the body's natural analog to a drug. So the pleasurable sensation created by the proximity of an endolphin, like any pleasurable sensation, can become addictive. And in excess amounts, it can really be a problem. So endolphins in the wild only appear in pods of up to 12. But because they produce this good effect, some, you know, communities will attempt to like capture and breed them in numbers greater than their naturally occurring pod size. And when that happens, the effect is basically overpowering. You get these people who are so blissed out that they can't really take care of themselves, they're defenseless, they neglect themselves, they neglect the things they're supposed to be doing, and before long you have people who are just kind of listless and passive, not really taking care of stuff. One thing that I really like about the endolphins is that immediately the idea of, you know, be moderately happy comes through, and that's, you know, that's a pretty classic approach to sort of the problems of pleasure. But because the thing that is making you happy is itself a living being, another layer appears, right? Without which I think the endolphin could be like a pretty facile metaphor, but it works, I think, because it's not a precise metaphor. So, you know, you're not really in control of when the endolphins appear in your life, unless you want to exercise some kind of power over them. So, you know, capture one and keep it in a tank in your throne room or whatever. And that would be almost the ideal solution for you. You get the constant pleasurable buzz of being around the endolphin, but you're never overwhelmed by it. And okay, maybe you're technically addicted, but it's an addiction that you can feed at little cost or risk to yourself. But it's a bit hard lines on the poor old endolphin, which is separated from its family, from its habitat, and which you cannot tame or control without doing that. So either you have to let happiness come to you when it comes to you and appreciate it while it's there, or you need to sort of take active measures in a way that could potentially be harmful. Even then, I don't think that's a good precise analogy. So, like, I like that the endolphin is a little messy and complicated. Now, there are a couple other monsters that I didn't get the chance to talk about in the extract that Richard sent me, including the Abstractor, which makes things abstract, the birthday demons who just want to celebrate your birthday. It may not be your birthday, but by gum, they want to celebrate it anyhow. The lake monster, your kind of folkloric Agopago or Champ or Nessie, I guess. The obscenely organic orchestra, the quack hounds, the dark satanic mill, and the Art Deco ostrich riders. So I think from there you can get a pretty good sense of what the overall tone of Chaotic Encounters is. So thank you very much to Richard for sending in this preview of Chaotic Encounters. I have another listener submitted bestiary in the pipeline. I may have two. I'd have to check. But I'm always torn because on the one hand, I love when people send me stuff. But on the other hand, at some point I am going to have to do Monsters Manual. And so I'm torn between the demands of my production schedule and my natural remorseless acquisitiveness. So we'll see how it all goes. But anyway, this week, $2 and up patrons will be getting a new episode of Patron Deities, which is going to focus on Anhur, one of the numerous Egyptian gods of war, Anubis, the well, a god who has various roles relating to the underworld, and Apep, the snake god of chaos. And then later on this week, we're going to have another extra long special episode. This one's about a sea monster. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.